Hello, and welcome to the Changemakers podcast. I'm Dave Corlett, Business Director at the creative agency ShapeBuy. And in this series, I chat to leading marketers at what we call Changemaker Brands, businesses on a mission to change the world for the better through technology. What I want to find out is the role that creativity plays in helping them to communicate the benefits of their technology. Hopefully their insights, experience, and stories can help you supercharge your own creativity. Now, this one is really, really interesting to me. It should be to any marketer out there in terms of B2B technology marketing. Because what really counts within your world is a really close relationship between sales and marketing. And I've got the perfect guest for you this week to talk all about that. Ben Bulpit is the VP of EMEA marketing for an identity security firm called SailPoint. But before he stepped into this role, he spent the best part of 30 years leading sales and accounts teams within technology businesses. His boss sprung it on him one day that he'd really like him to switch over and lead the marketing side of things. And the reason for that was to build a really close relationship between sales and marketing, something that is so, so important to businesses like SailPoint. And that's what I wanted to talk to Ben about. How do you build those really close relationships? How do you empathize with each other? How do you really make sure that you're both getting the best out of each other in the interests of revenue generation and growth? And that's what we talk about and so much more. So I really hope you enjoy this. Episode 10 of The Changemakers with Ben Bulpit from SailPoint. Here we go. Hey Ben, big warm welcome to The Changemakers podcast. How are you doing on this lovely Friday?
I'm very well, Dave. Thank you. Yes. Looking forward to a weekend. I hope it doesn't rain.
We've got the Easter holidays for the kids coming up, so that's playing on my mind. But listen, I'm really looking forward to this chat. I really want to get into some meaty topics around the relationship between sales and marketing, because that is firmly your domain, as I understand it. But before we do, it'd be really good to give our listeners a bit of an insight into... I'm going to choose my words carefully here, because some people don't necessarily like the word veteran, but you've been in the industry a very long time, and it'd be really good to know actually what your, how you got into it in the first place. What attracted you to this amazing technology sector?
I don't mind being called a veteran. It's the new retro, isn't it? Let's be. So I got into the IT industry back in what was the late 80s, early 90s, in what was then known third-party maintenance. So we were doing break-fix services on... what was then typically mainframe and large computer equipment. I remember when disk drives were 10 megs, and I remember the first sort of 60 meg disk drives and the weight that they were. Over the next 30 years, I progressed from outsourcing and maintenance services. I then got into software resale and consultancy. And then about 20 years ago, I started moving into the vendor community. I first worked for Symantec, I've worked for Computer Associates, Novell, and others. And in the last few years, I found myself at Oracle, where I was part of their key account team, and then most recently now at SailPoint. But all of that time has been primarily running, either selling to or leading teams in a sales capacity, responsible holding a target, holding responsibility for quarterly numbers, etc., which has been the foundation of my career has been this in the last 30 years, has been sales and sales management.
And has it mostly been slightly larger, like you mentioned Symantec and Oracle there, has it mostly been larger enterprise organisations?
Yeah, I've done a couple of startups, a couple of small companies which have been very, very enjoyable and exciting. Had quite a bit of a blended mix, really. Oracle obviously was a great experience for the size and the challenges and the diversity of their product set. CA, again, we was primarily focused in their security sector. That's probably predominantly been my background, the sort of core security and infrastructure software. And then SailPoint obviously is going through its growth at the moment, so it's going through quite a big transition and a big growth period, which is obviously very exciting. But you know, it's been a slightly blended mix. The other thing I've had quite an interesting experience in the sense I've both sold services, so I've been responsible for training and consultancy and advisory services, as well as selling product and licenses and, or as we now do, you know, SaaS services. So I sort of had that quite interesting blended approach. So I've had to be responsible for, you know, when we sell a service, you know, you're having to work on profit margins, you're having to work on cost ratios. Whereas obviously when you're selling a SaaS or software product, you're primarily, you know, you're not really that concerned about the cost of delivery, you're just trying to get the right price that's good for you and good for the customer. So I have a slightly, you know, when I look at a sale now, I'm always looking at it, you know, is it a good deal for me and the company and the customer, with that slightly more consultative head on sometimes, which sort of gives me quite a good perspective. And also meant, you know, that you learn to sell value and you learn to build a relationship, a rapport. And obviously when you're selling a service, as you guys know, it's about that value add that you're offering and sort of showing the incremental capabilities of the service, rather than just selling the product and a feature benefit capability. So yeah, it's been an interesting experience. And you know, in all of them, I look back on all of my sales and employees and sort of have some very fond memories and some great times and recollections. And as a veteran, as you called me, I, you know, I can tell a few war stories and a few interesting experiences that we've had.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want to get into some of them a bit later on. Just in terms of SailPoint, where you are now, yeah, could you give us a bit of an insight into SailPoint, identity management in that world?
Yeah, I was... My background in Oracle was I looked after what was the core platform, so predominantly what was the middleware and the database technologies. And I joined SailPoint back in 2018 to look after what was, and they still have, which is their data governance platform. And I ran that for SailPoint across Europe, Middle East and Africa. And I was what interested me about SailPoint wasn't necessarily the technology, it was the opportunity to do a pan-European role, something I'd always wanted to do. So that opportunity presented itself. And obviously that's what I joined, and you know, having that background in core technologies like the database and the infrastructure technologies and identity, which I'd been working on at both Novell and CA, and I'd worked for an identity consultancy prior to Oracle, so I had that background. So that sort of gave me a good springboard into understanding both, you know, the identity and the security posture, as well as the data governance posture. That role I started, as I say, 2018. And then about 18 months into the role, SailPoint went through a bit of a directional, you know, they wanted to consolidate some of the businesses. And I found myself really being given a choice. I remember it vividly, the conversation with then the VP of Europe, which was, I've got two roles I want you to consider, but one of them I don't want you to really take. I want you to take the role that I'm going to explain to you. So the first role was, you know, he was just looking for someone to run one of the sales teams. But he said, the role that we really want you to consider is to run marketing for Europe, Middle East and Africa. And at the time, I sort of sat over a coffee and I said, sorry, Tim, what did you say? And he said, you know, we think you'd be really good at running marketing because you have a sales background and you have lots and lots of sales background and you've got this consultative background. Plus, we want someone who the salespeople can respect, who can engage, who understands how they think, who understands sort of their challenges. And you can bring that to marketing and bridge that gap between sales and marketing. So I moved over about nearly 3 years ago now. It's probably been the best thing I've ever done. It's been thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable. Gives you a whole different insight into the business. I'd say to every seller, you don't really understand what marketing do, because a lot of what we do is in the background. You know, interestingly, we've just done a big event this week. We did a live television broadcast. First time we'd ever done it at SailPoint live. We had customers presenting in a TV studio, full TV production crew, everything. But it was really just, Dave, 2 hours. But it was 8 to 10 weeks work of everything you're building up, all the PR, the work that we have to do with creative, all the agency, getting the scripts written, getting everything. And that 2 hours to a sales guy, they just rock up to see the event. And I was one of those people. You don't know what goes in. And actually part of my job, I think, as a marketing director is to communicate to the sales leaders, look, this is what we need to do. And this is why I need your sales teams to be involved, because I know you guys are busy, but these things just don't happen. You've got to buy in early and you've got to commit early to helping us support that. I can put on the best event in the world, but if you don't buy into it and your sales teams don't buy into it, then it's never going to be a success. They've got to help drive that audience. And I think that perspective, when I came into the role, I remember saying to the team that worked for me, goodness gracious, I was one of the idiots that was in the salespeople who were sort of like, why haven't you done this? But now you really understand what marketing goes through. That gave me a really interesting perspective, because I can now communicate that back to the sellers. I also come to the marketing teams with a view that sometimes says, that's not going to work. You know, you're going to try something, and I can tell you now, an enterprise team, well, they just won't get it. They won't buy into that, because they'll see that as it's not adding value. So you've got to find that right communication and that right medium. But it does give me probably quite a unique insight. And what I've also tried to instill in my team is look at the sellers as our customer. If you look at your sellers as a customer and you service that, our job is to service them and provide them with the best marketing content syndication, marketing services, brochures, events, activities to help them do their job, we can get them to buy in. But see them as a customer and have that conversation with them like you would do with a customer, you have a very different relationship.
Absolutely. And, you know, what you just mentioned about your career path fascinated me as soon as we met and started talking. So when you were first stepping into that role, then your first kind of weeks and months in that marketing role, how did you kind of level up your knowledge and how did you manage that transition? Was it quite a knowledge intense process? Were you doing a lot of learning and really trying to get your teeth into the role? Yeah. Was it quite daunting as well?
Yeah, I remember vividly sitting over dinner with my then boss. I'd been in role about 10 days, 2 weeks, and she said, "How do you feel?" And I said, "If I'm honest with you, Laura, I'm absolutely scared witless. I feel like this rabbit looking in the headlights." And she said, "That's how you should feel, because you have a massive learning curve to go through. Plus, you've got 4 very, very experienced field marketing managers who work for you, who are far more experienced than you. So you have to learn from them, but also you have to lead and direct and guide them, as well as be a member of the European leadership team." So I just sort of went on this massive journey of consuming anything, all reports. I sort of read loads of books. I spoke to loads of marketing friends of mine. Great friend of mine, Sue, who I've known for years. We worked together at Novell, Sue Maguire. Went and had lunch with her and I just said, "Look, can I just sit and just pick your brains?" And that's what one thing I do find with the marketing function is the marketeers are very happy to share a lot more with each other, even though we might be slightly competitive. But, you know, actually there's that willingness to sit there. "How did you do that? And what agencies have you used? And how did that work?" And actually I find that really refreshing. So I sort of went on that journey of just sort of on a massive sponge of absorbing as much information from people like your agencies and talking to people and understanding the terminology. And obviously then became, I wouldn't say I'm proficient, but I became competent in the way I could have a conversation and start to plan out that strategy. And then I've just read, constantly reading books around marketing functions, listening to podcasts. There's various marketing podcasts that you can listen to that I find very good. And there's a very good guy, Jeff, who's the ex-forester thing. I read a lot of his stuff. But that's been useful as a way of getting up to speed. But then obviously just experiencing it, going under, helping with events, getting content syndications, getting materials, getting campaigns drafted. You start to really understand and get my teeth into it. So I now feel a little bit more than scared witless. I've got a bit more competence about me and I can have a conversation now with agencies and outline what we want in a lot more context, which is very useful. But I rely very heavily on the team that I've got around me. I've always had a view wherever I've worked, whenever I've led a team, to try and make sure that you have people who are perhaps even better skilled at than you and more competent than you and challenge your thinking as a leader, but also are contributing. And if you give them that environment that they feel valued and they can do their jobs, then I think you get a far better outcome and result. You know, I've got 4 very, very senior field marketing managers. You could probably do this job. They've chosen that they're quite happy doing it in their region. So my job is to empower them and enable them and to give them that headroom. And then obviously work together with them to direct where I think we should go and then, you know, adapt that to the local markets. I think that's the other thing that the role in EMEA gives you, is you've got to be cognizant of the fact, and this is something a little bit, I think, challenged from some of the US I see. The best analogy I can always give someone is if I live, our office is in Austin, if I drive to Dallas, which is 5 hours away, I'm in the same state of Texas. I could get on a train or a car in London in 5 hours. I could be in 5 different countries with 5 different languages and 5 different nuances of way of doing business. And that's, you know, Belgium is very different to the way that Holland does it, to the way that France does it, to the way that Germany does it. And I think my job as a European leader and a director is to recognize and understand that and give those teams, look, this is what we want to do. How do we adapt that to your local market?
Well, it sounds like there's a lot on your plate, but I think it's a really good point about surrounding yourself with people who are equally, if not more competent than you at their skill set, because, you know, that's what people talk about at the very top of leadership at CEO level, you know, and the what makes a great leader. So I'm really glad you touched on that. I just wanted to come back to something you mentioned a little bit earlier about that really strong relationship between sales and marketing, and marketing treating the sellers as your customers. Do you think that the relationship between sales and marketing, even going back to your time on the sales side, has changed in recent years as B2B buyers have a bit more control over the buying process in terms of the information that they can glean without talking to sales guys? Do you think it's a relationship that's changed a little bit, particularly in recent years?
I think it's absolutely monumental. It's changed. I think COVID has driven that. You know, historically, everyone wanted to go out and meet. You know, when we first spoke to you guys, it was all done through Zoom. Historically, you know, salespeople want to come out and meet in the office, and you'd have that conversation and you'd have that dialogue and that rapport would get built. You know, COVID fundamentally stopped all that. But prior to that, the journey was becoming far more digital. People were far more engaging in content and information that they could consume at their time and at their pace. You know, we've done some interesting statistics. If you read, there's a Gartner, quite a good Gartner sales leaders report. We do a lot of work with people like TechTarget and the work that they do around Priority Engine. There's some really good reports from McKinsey and the World Economic Forum. But in what we're seeing in the B2B world, between 70 and 80% of the buyer's journey is done before they even talk to us. Okay, so and the average age of the buyer in our world in identity is between 18 to 34. So most of those people have only consumed everything via a mobile device. They don't need to talk to anyone. They can get everything that they want through the internet, through YouTube, through TikTok, whatever medium they want to consume. So we as a marketing team need to be far more digitally advanced and far more digitally competent at getting to people with the right information and the right material at the right time when they're in that cycle, and then directing them. Interestingly, in the world of identity management, the top 13 search terms for identity do not include the word identity. People don't go on this journey and go, I'm going to buy an identity management solution. They go on a journey that says, I need to try and stop internal threats, or how do I stop, you know, how do I improve my join and move a lever process? How do I manage multiple accesses into a system? They don't think about identity. So what our job as a marketing function and to work with organizations like you is to produce material and content that's relevant, serve that up at locations where people are consuming content. I have quite a strong view on this, which is we are becoming far more intent and far more data-driven around intent intelligence and intent information. And you've got to understand your buyer. You know, you, Dave, may want to consume information right via a blog. I might want to consume it more like white papers. You've got to start to understand the nuances of your customers and how they want to consume. Just because we write a really good white paper doesn't mean that that's how everyone wants to consume their information. So you've got to look at not only the content, but how you serve that content. Is it in its digital form, whether that be through, as I said, blogs, video, white papers, whatever you want, an ebook. Serve that in the right place. So if you're looking for solutions like SailPoint, you know, are we servicing that information to you where you are, where you want to go find it? And then the other thing, obviously, is, you know, from a brand perspective, you know, there's a lot more in we are starting to do with the social media platforms, LinkedIn, Zing, even Facebook now. We're starting to use those platforms as a way of corralling people into our world. As a seller, you don't see that. So the marketing function has got to do a lot more of that nurturing and a lot more of that feeding that information into the user. So when they do raise their hands and they do want to say, yeah, I'm actually ready to talk, we as marketing function need to provide that intelligence. So we need to be saying, you know, Dave from ShapeBuy, he's been on our website full times. He's downloaded this content. It appears he likes to watch videos. He's been to this webinar. You provide that information to the seller. So the seller's conversation with you is not, hi, I'm SailPoint, let me tell you all about you. You've got to assume that you as the journey that you've been on, you've got all that information. Our job then is to say to the guy, they don't need to know about SailPoint. What you need to be telling them is where do they need to be, how we can help them on their journey, or slightly deviate them away from where they think they want to go to actually where we think we want them to go. We're starting to see that becoming even more relevant, you know, especially with the new Google, the advent of cookies starting to be impacted and how you start to track people and some of the data. So trying to get the information to the right sites is really important. The other thing that's I love talking to the sellers, you know, they always say to us, why don't you gate the content so we know who's downloading it? I said, because how many times when you go to a website and you ask to fill it out, how many times do you fill it out? And they go, well, I don't. I go, there you go. People know what we're trying to do. They know the moment they fill that out, actually, you're just trying to get their contact details. One of the things that we've been trying to do, and I think, I mean, this isn't just SailPoint, this is a lot of the in our world, and you would have seen this with the companies that you talk to, is give something away for free. Give a really good piece of valuable content away. Just say, here, Mr. Customer, have it. We don't expect anything from you. And in fact, I was talking to one of our ISRs. He was trying to get into an account. And I said to him, just give him a load of our white papers. He said, yeah, but what happens if, you know, he doesn't read them? I said, doesn't matter. Give something for nothing. Don't expect anything. And interestingly, the guy sent, he said, look, I understand you might be interested in some white papers. Here they are. Left it. Didn't even put, I'm going to call you. I'm going to do it. Just said, hope you might find them interested. Regards. 2 weeks later, the guy sent him an email saying, thank you very much for these white papers. I'm actually more interested in this. Do you have some information on that? Suddenly, the rapport built up. And I think that is the big difference in the buying journey now, is there is so much more digital information that we've got to serve and that customers can get hold of. It's trying to make sure that you're servicing that in the right place. And that does fall to marketing. That is our responsibility to collate that. And then obviously link that all into activities and events that you're trying to do. So, you know, if people are on that journey, then you've got to try and intercept them and say, you know, look, we're at this event, we're at this show, come and see us, come and have a conversation with us.
I mean, we're on a podcast here, but I'm nodding fervently in agreement with what you're saying here, because this shift from traditional lead gen to contemporary modern day demand generation is what we're seeing the highest performing businesses in this world doing, and they're doing it for exactly the reasons that you mentioned. You know, I'm really curious to know how that's playing out on the sales side in terms of things like pipeline velocity, higher quality leads coming through, because you're not just firing over a load of names and email addresses that have come from some gated content, and it could be anyone and everyone. Have you got a happier sales team? Have you got a stronger relationship with them because of your shift into a more demand generation based approach?
I've never met a sales team yet who say, marketing's doing a great job. Every sales team will always say, yeah, we need more leads, or we could do with more content, or the website needs updating. I always love it when they sort of say, you know, we've done a number of digital ads, and one of the sales guys said, well, I've never seen them. And I said, that's good. Because if you are seeing them, we're serving it to the wrong audience. You know, we don't need to serve you an ad about SailPoint. We need to serve it to the right people. The sales velocity is a really interesting question, because it's a balancing act at the moment. What we're trying to do in our organization is look at the sales in sort of three really distinct phases. There's the pre-funnel stage, which is really us and the ISRs, marketing, working together, nurturing, sending emails, trying to serve the ads, get them engaged at some point. Now, obviously, if we can, a lot earlier in the funnel is historically digital marketing, web activities, adverts, etc. And as they start to sort of show intent, how we serve that content and where we serve that content. But get them to a point where they raise their hand. And once they get to the point where they, you know, we can see activity, we can start, then we want to start to service that. And we're just transitioning a whole bunch of material and processes in the organization, so that we are able to now start to say, you know, here is all the intelligence about that particular account and that particular individual and what they've downloaded. So that's the sort of the first stage, and that's really us and the ISOs. The challenge we see there is, when does it become a more of a sales qualified program rather than a marketing qualified? And there's a real fine line there, because if you give it too early, the customer won't engage and the sellers will push it back. If you give it slightly too late, they may already be predetermined. So you've got a really short window there that you've got to find. And that's just trial and error. What we're trying to do a lot more is say to the ISRs, don't just reject it. Give us some intelligence as to why. If Dave from Shapewise is not engaging, is that because we've given him too early? He might be ready, but he's not ready to talk to us yet. So let's perhaps do a bit more nurture. But that is quite a fine line. The second area that we are, which is once they get into the pipe, that function there from marketing becomes quite critical, especially in the field. That's about, are we delivering events, activities to help progress that account along? So if couple of examples recently where, you know, we've got early stage that's gone through that nurture, it's been qualified, the customer's indicated there's an opportunity, we've got to a certain sales stage. Marketing's function there is very much that traditional, right, we've got an event, let's get these people, let's progress them into that pipeline. And that's quite a heavy lift. You know, we see that, you know, events, white papers still, webinars, you know, we do a lot of executive dinners and round tables where we bring customers and prospects. But that primarily is to move that velocity along. And then they get to a certain stage, we're around about sales stage 60, and then we at marketing pull right back. We will still serve them ads, but slightly different ads, just to keep that momentum going. But we pull back from all really, you know, email campaigns, etc. for them. The view then is the sellers do not need them in any way, shape or form being detracted by another campaign from a marketeer. So what we're trying to do, and then that cycle goes all the way back, because obviously once they've signed the deal, there's the opportunity to go and upsell them, and we again, are they in market? So we try to divide that into three distinct areas. What I do with my team is obviously at the very start, we work very closely with the digital, the PR teams. We work very closely at trying to sort of localize content and where we serve that and what platforms and what agencies we're using. We will talk to people like yourselves around, you know, we think this is something that we want to talk about, or this is a particular topic. If we're not getting that from corporate, how do we localize that or bring that to life? So good example in Germany, if I go to our corporate product marketing team and say, look, there's a new German healthcare legislation that we think is important, they struggle. Well, okay, they don't understand it. So we'll go to a third party agency to help produce that content and that material. But that's all at that early stage. And then obviously the more traditional stuff that we would work on around activities and events is that second stage. And then again, we flip a bit more to a digital side towards the end, just to keep that sales program and that sales process working. And we articulate to that sales team, that's partly my job, you know, is this is what we do for you. This is what we can show you. You know, if you don't want us to do the digital ads at the second, at the third stage I just mentioned, then we won't do it. You know, we'll step away. We found that quite effective in COVID, especially at the very start of COVID, because customers pretty much went radio silent for quite a period of time. So actually still serving them just gentle ads around or directing them to a site where they could consume some information that might be relevant, we found very, very useful as a way of keeping that progression and that sales velocity. So what we're trying to do in all of that is ultimately, if we can produce a better qualified lead, that the customer is ready to raise their hand and we can help progress that, our objective is to try and reduce our sales velocity by about sort of 25-30%. And then the other thing we're trying to do is how do you manage then increase the deal size as well. That to a certain degree is a little bit out of marketing's hands, because that's down to what the customer's demands are and what the seller feels that they can sell. But obviously what our job is to try and do is to make sure that they have the full portfolio that they can sell. So, you know, do they have all the functionality? If the customer's looking at or talking about AI or machine learning, we want to make sure that the sellers are bringing that into that sales cycle.
Cool. Fascinating stuff. It really is. So you're kind of talking about prospects here, but does this kind of looking at more intent data and intelligence also apply to account-based strategies as well? Is that something you work on quite heavily at the moment?
Yeah, so we have an account-based program and we're looking at intent information and intelligence around accounts. I also think this intent data is very much relevant for customers. So we use a lot of the intent intelligence that we have around what our customers are doing. Are they in market for maybe an upsell? Are they looking at other areas of our portfolio that we should be doing? Perhaps even somewhat concerningly, are they looking at our competitors? So, you know, through some of the services that we work with, we can see if a customer is downloading material or downloading content from, you know, one of our competitors. And that should, for me, should be a red flag that we raise up to our customer success team and say, you know, Dave from Shapebuy is, you know, downloading XYZ content. Why? Do we know, is there an issue? Have we got a customer sat issue on our platform? Is that because he thinks that that vendor might be a better alternative, or is it that they're looking for an additional feature that they don't necessarily think we can fulfill? So that, you know, partly we use that intent data for both customers and obviously that and prospects is really important, and also it helps when the other thing that we've seen is when we have our conversation with our partners now, rather than going in and saying, well, let's do an event here, or let's do a dinner there. What we're saying is these are accounts appear to be in market in your, you tell us you're the partner. How do we get these accounts to start to engage with us in a joint proposition? And we've had some really interesting conversations with partners who now see, you know, it's not necessarily just give me a bunch of marketing collateral, but we're saying here's a marketing campaign, but more importantly, here's a set of accounts that we see in market. We probably want to go and help join, put a joint proposition or a joint plan together. And that's been very, very useful and very insightful.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. In terms of going back to that original conversation about building strong relationships with sales, is there any advice that you would give to marketing leaders who are maybe struggling a little bit to build that close relationship with sales? And I know you mentioned something previously.
Yeah, spend time with them, go out with them, ask to join their guys out on sales calls, get to understand what's the conversations that they're having with their customers, understand some of their challenges, you know, work with them around early stage pipeline activity to show how you can add value to that. You know, what for me, it's pretty, you know, many years ago I was reading a really interesting article, and it was about a guy called Frank Karuba who worked for HP, and he was trying to look at the difference between sort of between good and great teams. And what he always said was the difference between good and great teams was great teams, you know, they operated with a really high degree of integrity. They really trusted each other. But perhaps the most important thing is they communicated far more regularly and far more frequently than other teams do. And, you know, good teams were all very talented and all very motivated. But the great teams, so, you know, for me, in the 2.5 years, we've built a very, very powerful and strong relationship with the sellers. And the sellers will come and talk to us and I will talk to them. My advantage is I understand their world. I've done it for 30 years, so I'm happy to sit on a sales call and I actually can contribute. But all my team, I say to them, you know, go out, go and spend a day with the seller, understand what his job is, understand how he works, what he has to do. That will give you an insight into their mindset. And also then share with them. Sometimes, like I said at the very start, you know, I sit down with them, I say, you know, we're going to do this activity, we're going to do this event. And I'll tell them that like 8 weeks before, because actually I'm saying to them, this is what we need to do. Get in early. Identify some of your key sellers. And it doesn't have to be the sales leaders. We've got a couple of guys that we identify closely in our team across EMEA who will get them to try and buy in. Because if they buy in, the other sellers will go, well, if he's doing it, well, I better do it because I don't want to be the one left out. What I always say is make sure you try and find your sales champion who will say, yeah, I'll get my customer to come along. I'll make sure that they're there, because then you get a bunch of, you know, a bit like a herd mentality. But yeah, for me, it's really about you've got to communicate with these guys. You've got to understand their world and you've got to build that relationship with them. And that's got to be a trusted relationship. You know, they will share with you and if they and deliver on what you're going to say. You know, if you're going to help that customer, then, you know, make sure that you deliver on it for them.
And does it work the other way around? So do you think more sales individuals and leaders should take the time to use their own initiative and become more invested in the world of marketing and their marketing colleagues?
I haven't yet met a salesperson who doesn't think they're a really good marketeer.
Everybody does, though. That's not exclusive to sales.
Everyone thinks exactly, it is. Until you sort of come to do it, and then they always go, oh, wow, I didn't realise you had to do this amount. Yeah, look, I think that we are becoming far more intertwined. I think the program, the sales process is becoming far more digitized. That reliance on some of the skill sets that, you know, historically we perhaps wouldn't necessarily have, as a seller, have seen. A really good example, we did, you know, say we did this event this week. You know, we had over 1,800 people register, and nearly 20% of that came through digital adverts. So, you know, we're reaching people that these guys are going, well, I'm trying to get to Dave. And we go, yeah, but we can reach him sometimes in a far better way than just you sending him an email or sending him a phone call. So actually really understanding what is the marketing function and how we can and how we operate, I think will give them a lot more insight. And then, you know, just buy into the whole, if there's an activity, an event, for me, any seller I would say is, really understand it. Don't just treat it as, oh, I've got to go and rock up to this event. Buy into it, because actually what you'll find is that you'll get a far better reception from your marketing colleagues. You'll go, right, okay, what can I do for your customer to help drive that and support you? So, yeah, it is a two-way communication. But I think as marketeers, you know, sellers, with the greatest of respects, sellers could do their job without marketing per se. They may not do their number, but they could still go out and make phone calls, pick the phone up, knock on the doors. it is now, we are very much linked. I think we're seeing more and more marketing functions report to the CRO. I've seen that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's becoming a better way of driving that. But actually, I believe it is incumbent upon marketing first to go to the sellers. We've got to go to them. They're our customer. We've got to support them. Once you show that value, I think you'll find that they will then start to reciprocate far more effectively. If you just sit and if you just take account, well, they should come to us and tell us what they want. If they don't, well, we'll just carry on. You're never going to overcome that sales and marketing dysfunctional misalignment. Marketing's got to make the first move first.
Yeah, and again, you know, there's commentary within the industry around trying to remove as many of those silos as possible by effectively making it one operation, a revenue operation, you know. And like you said, reporting to the CRO is definitely one way of doing that. I wanted to take the conversation one stage further, actually, Ben, and ask if you thought that more sales leaders should follow your path and step into marketing roles. What do you reckon?
Absolutely. For me, you get a far more insight into the business. You actually go, it's quite interesting, I've gone from having to try and make the company money now to having to try and manage the spend that the company gives me. So it's sort of quite interesting switch. I would encourage, I think you can go from marketing to sales. I think that's quite an easy route to go through because you can understand that. I think coming the other way would give a lot of sellers the insight. For me, the way I looked at it, I was given an opportunity to change my career. And I'm in my, as you say, at the very start, a bit of a veteran. I've been in the industry for a while. And my wife actually said to me, you're not probably going to have that opportunity again in your early 50s to suddenly totally switch career and do something and create something. And actually, that became really exciting. And that sort of drove my insight. I think if any sales leader really wants to understand, should spend a year or so in the marketing function to understand all the disciplines. That's the other thing I think which is really interesting. People just sometimes see marketing as you put your, you know, can you put the logo on the board behind the football player as the interviews after match of the day or whatever, or you know, can you get the name on the shirt? I always remember my sons were saying to me, Dad, can't you get SailPoint on the name of the England shirt or something? That would be really good, wouldn't it? I'm like, yeah, that would be the whole of the marketing budget for everything gone for 90 minutes. But I think there is sometimes this perception, and I think when you, as a seller and as a sales leader, if you get into understand the marketing function, you understand all the different disciplines, then you can start to see, okay, there's a far bigger jigsaw that I need to really understand. It's not just about an event or a set of leads. It's how are we generating? What's the material? Is that material generating the right level of engagement that we want? If not, how do we slightly change that? You know, that's the other thing that the technology is now giving us, is we're able to far more easily see if something's working or not and switch it in and out. Historically, we've not had that information. And I think as a seller, if you really just get to understand some of the marketing disciplines, it will give you that better insight. Say, oh, okay, perhaps I need to be more involved, or I need to help create some of that content that I can then help them drive that intelligence and also understand all the disciplines around, you know, how you advertise on social media, cost per click, cost per, you know, SEO, SEM, all that understanding. And I never understood that. Now, you know, 3 years later, you've become, you know, I feel I can have a conversation with an SEO and an SEM, an SEO agency quite competently about what we want and how you optimize that website. And I think if you understood that as a seller, it would give you a very different insight into marketing.
Yeah, and I guess that applies in a lot of different areas of the business out of sales and marketing, really, you know, going and spending time on the shop floor, as it were, or with engineers, or you know, developers, anybody that kind of has an impact on what you do as a business, to go and understand their world. You know, you often hear about on the consumer side, you know, marketeers going and spending a day within a retail store, or even longer than a day maybe, but certainly enough time to really understand the nuts and bolts of what's happening at different levels of the business and how that's affecting day-to-day commercial success or failure, really. But yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time today, Ben. Really, really do appreciate it. There's a question we always ask our guests to finish off, which is, from your extensive career in this industry, is there one particular, I guess it could be a campaign on the marketing side, or even going back to your days in accounts and sales, some account success or a particular project that you are more proud of than any other?
It's a great question, David. It's one I always ask people about in their interviews. This week I've just had, you know, just come off the back of an incredible event that's taken a while, and that will probably stick with me for a while, what we did there. There's probably two campaigns that stick in my mind that when I was, one was at Novell and one was at Oracle, around the commitment and dedication. And I was told that I would probably not get the deal. It was going to be a bridge too far. They were never going to accept that. And I'm a bit of a tenacious old bugger, and I just sort of got my teeth stuck into this, and I committed. And I remember the Novell deal, I gave up all my other accounts for one account, and everyone said I was mad. And, you know, 18 months later, we did the biggest deal in Novell's history at that time with the client. And that, for me, stuck in that sort of, you know, right, that was something we did. And then, as I say, with Oracle, we did a very big cross-functional deal, which involved the core technology, the apps team, the infrastructure team, and again, led the deal on that one. I remember sitting in a room thinking, I am the deal lead on this, and I had all these people saying to me, so right, Ben, what do we do, and everything, and I'm like, okay, this is really exciting, but it was that corralling of very disparate sales teams and everyone's multiple agendas, and bringing that to a coherent sort of value proposition to the client. And then, you know, literally sitting on the call, and they were saying, well, you know, you are the deal lead on this one. And that one for me sticks in my mind as sort of a really good example of collaboration and teamwork across the Oracle function and the Oracle account teams, as something I'm really, really proud of.
Brilliant. Excellent stuff. Thank you so much, Ben. Have a great rest of your day. And thank you again for being a guest on The Changemakers.
And you. My pleasure, Dave. Nice to speak to you again.